pull through the housekeeping items. I think everyone is here. Please place your line on mute. Press star 6. As I had mentioned earlier, we're going to use the chat box for questions, and Ruben is going to monitor those questions and pose them to Stan when he makes his when he takes a break. I think everyone knows where the chat box is, but if you don't, here, this provides you with that information. And please, again, place your phone on mute during the entire time of the call, except when you are going to be asking a question at a break or a follow-up question. This call is being recorded so that we will all have an opportunity to look at it again after after the session. So with that, I will turn it over to you, Stan.
Thank you, Karen. Today we're going to take a look at what I call the fidelity of probe data for arterial corridors here at the University of Maryland under the support of the coalition. We've been wrestling with this for this current one for the last 2 years, but we've been wrestling with this for 6 years. And wanted to just put a stake in the ground and share with the community, here's what we see. It's not clean. It's not pretty. It's kind of like wrestling with the data. But nonetheless, as of the end of 2014, the state and the issues of probe data on signalized roadways. To get going, I got to find the controls. There we go. I've broken it into this level, background. So everyone's kind of entering at the same level. And for those who just want the short story, the Reader's Digest condensed version, we'll go to a straight to a one-slide executive summary. But I hope you'll stick around for the details, because after the executive summary, I'm going to try to put some flesh, some images, elucidate some of the issues that are in arterial probe data, so that at the end, not only do you have the summary, but you also have visions, images in your head of what these issues are. And then finally, we're going to end on future direction. And we'll pause between each one of these, both for me to get a breath, as well as if I rush through something too quickly, which is my tendency, you can ask for clarifications or questions. I tend to get too detailed on certain things, so I've sanity checked this with a number of people and tried to get it at the right level of detail and plan for about 45 minutes worth of content. First, I'd like to thank the validation team, the people here at CAP, Elham, Ruben, Sapita, Masood, and numerous grad students. They've been hard at work doing analysis, then redoing it and redoing it again at my request until we can and find the information. Over at the Civil Engineering Department, Al Hyogani, who's been the technical manager for validation since the beginning in 2008 and has many grad students, many of which we have hired over here at CAP for providing consistent support. State coordinators, you know when you get a call from me and soon to be Masood that we're knocking on your door and want to coordinate and put some sensors out and collect data, I appreciate all the cooperation. It has been excellent. KMJ, Karen and Joanna, for tirelessly reviewing reports. And not only that, sanity checking presentations. I call it the KMJ seal of approval. Many times they listen to what I try to say and they say, explain it to us again and help us get it into terms that are much more understandable. And this presentation has the KMJ seal of approval, I'm quite sure. And then the Coalition for the Consistent Financial Support. First, a little background on the initiative. Many of you who have been with the DPP project from the beginning and familiar with the validation may be intimately familiar with these details, but just a little groundwork. This whole project began in 2008 with an emphasis on freeway miles. We had 1,500 initially, and it grew fast after that. But we also had arterials in there. By arterials, I mean multi-lane signalized corridors that complemented the freeway network, provided the crosslinks, provided detours when needed. But the emphasis back then was still on freeways because we were unsure of data quality. Now, this is as of 2013, so even it's a year and a half dated. We're up to around 40,000 miles in the whole system. And if you look at the proportion there, I want to bring up the little arrow to emphasize it. This is the number of freeway miles. We're somewhere around 8,000. And the number of non-freeway miles, many of which are these types of arterials we're talking about, are up around 32,000. So it is important to understand the fidelity of that. And somehow I went backwards instead of forwards. There we go. This effort we're currently reporting on is the third in the effort. You know, if you don't succeed, try again. Early on, between 2008 and 2010, as we had opportunity, we diverted resources and looked at some signalized arterials. And what we discovered that arterials are really different. And they're very hard to validate as well. A lot of the tools that we had developed for for the freeway had to be tweaked or rethought. Then in 2011 and 2012, we did a deep dive on a few case studies saying, you know, let's really get messy with the data. And that's where we came out with some new tools, an overlay plot, as well as corresponding what we call cumulative frequency diagrams. You may be aware of that. Their focus is really on looking at repeatable congestion patterns and how well probe data reflects it. And then over the past 2 years, we've collected 9 case studies from multiple states, a variety of lanes, volume, and number of signals. And then we've also reintroduced a slowdown analysis. Back in 2008, before we had all the software prepared, we used to go through by hand to take a look at the freeway results, and we say, oh, there's a slowdown. Did the probe data catch it? Well, that same basic analysis we found to be very useful, and we'll be presenting it here with respect to some of the arterial results. This is an old slide, but to reinforce it, many of you know there's quite a contrast between freeways and arterials. We were aware of many of those, you know, in the first 3 rows. We knew a difference in volume and the speed ranges. Free flows are generally determined by the prevailing signal timing. What we didn't anticipate is when you got into the actual congestion signatures, when you're looking at travel time and speed, those signatures, what they look like in data, were distinctly different. And in being distinctly different, much of not only was probe data challenge that had grown up on freeway data, many of our methods were challenged to get a handle on it. And the lower right box, if I were to highlight it right here, higher variance and frequently bimodal. These are the two things that make it difficult for probe data to provide the same level of data quality that it has achieved on freeways. And I'll show you a couple examples of that. First, I always start because I grew up on the freeway data. This is a typical chart, and I'll show you several of these later from arterials. To orient everyone, this is a 24-hour plot. This is midnight of the day before, and this is midnight of the day of. And on the y-axis is speed. And so you get to see generally how the roadway flows with respect to speed over a 24-hour. And of course, we have a deep AM slowdown here on this roadway and another deep PM slowdown. I try to keep the convention of the reference data that we use is Bluetooth re-identification data. So blue and Bluetooth, I try to put the reference data always in blue on these plots right here. So you see these X's, each one of these X's is a matched pair to give us travel time from which we get speed. Think of it as toll tag matching or license plate matching, but we actually use a form where it's based on wireless devices. The red data is the probe data provided by the vendor. In this case, it's INRIX, and you can see the relative agreement with the red data through the blue cloud of reference data, and the statistics in the comparison of the two is what we measure. Before we go off this slide, I wanted to point out two things. First of all, you'll see it in contrast to arterials in another couple slides, but back here at the beginning, in the middle of the night, you can see there's a black line. This is the mean of the Bluetooth data, and there's these dotted lines around the black line. This is what we call the SEM band, which I always forget what the acronym is, Standard Error of the Mean. Ruben piped in behind me here. It was introduced as into our validation process to say there's many times when the data is so sparse, we're really not sure what the central tendency or the mean is. So we ran a little statistics and we put a band around that. And it, for freeways, it is rare that it is comes into play anywhere except in the overnight hours. If you're to look through the rest of this data, the those dotted lines are barely perceptible through much of the rest of the day. Those dotted lines get us into trouble on the arterials. The traditional validation, it compares the Bluetooth reference data to the probe data. We have two basic measures, the average absolute speed error. This measures the deviation from what we call the ground truth. And then the bias, is it consistently over or underestimating that speed data? And we broke it up into four flow regimes, 0 to 30, 30 to 45, 45 to 60, and greater than 60. And those lower two, those 0 to 30, 30 to 45, that's where the proof in the pudding is. That is, if they can capture accurate data in those lower speed ranges, which is when freeway flow is congested, then typically the data perform quite well. And for freeways, the official specifications were measured against this SEM band as well as the mean, and that was one of the issues getting into arterials. Conclusion, freeway validation methods using this do not work well on arterials. They do provide you insight. There's things you can learn, but particularly one of the things we learned is we had to drop this concept of the SEM band, and I'll explain why on the next slide. If you take a look at much of the arterial flow, first of all, for the same roadway segment, as soon as you put signals on them and curb cuts, you get a much wider variance in speed. And this graph of a sample of arterial data, you know, it looks very much like the variance in speed in the overnight hours on the freeway. So what we inadvertently introduced in carrying over the freeway methods was we were masking a lot of the detail in the data if we carried along this SEM band. The other thing is to point out is we mentioned bimodal flows many times on these signalized arterials. A portion of the traffic is able to progress through on green, another portion has to wait until the next signal cycle. And this is what you get if you take a look at this graph and you take a look at the two blue stripes of data here. One is getting through approximately 15 miles an hour. They're the one unlucky souls that had to wait to the next light cycle. And another group is getting through at 25. It splits the vehicles almost in half. This type of what we call this bimodal distribution, if you were to look at all the data we collected, I would estimate was in 30 to 40% of all the validation data we collected. And what you're seeing here is the vehicle probe data, the red dots, tend to follow the faster of the two speeds. This is one of the general conclusions. For the data we collected 2013 to 2014, we call this the optimistic bias. When faced with what's really going on in the field of a faster set of vehicles and a slower set of vehicles, it will tend to report the faster set of vehicles more often than not. That kind of lays the groundwork. I even hinted at some of the results, but let you know the Vehicle Pro project, our framework. I was going to pause here. Are there any clarifications? Okay. I apologize for the jumping around. Evidently, there's something that's affecting the progression of slides, other than me clicking on the thing. Okay, executive summary, the short story. For those who don't want to wade through any more details, I'll cut straight to the chase. Based on everything that we've looked at 2013 to 2014, here is our recommendation and a few short points. First of all, the quality of all the things on an arterial you can measure, the thing that correlates most to probe data quality is the signal density. From that, we found that if you're at a signal density on a corridor of one signal per mile or less, you're likely to have usable data. The data will reflect what's going on out there. The level of accuracy may vary. If you're around in 2008, 2009, those first 2 years when we're working with freeway data, probe data for freeways, you know, it was like that. It generally reflected what was going on the roadway. Its degree of accuracy is what varied considerably. Anything greater than two signals per mile, B, be very careful. You can find things in that range that appear to work, but you can also get very erratic behavior where one segment in a corridor works well, the next one does not for some reason, and there doesn't seem to be any noticeable reason why. Increased volume aids data quality. No doubt, if, you know, 40,000, everything being equal, I want more volume, but it does not overcome the issues that are associated when you get dense signalization and the complexity of flow and how probe data is challenged. So everything else being equal, more volume. Accuracy is anticipated to improve with increased probe density. In fact, we'll share some top-level results from 2015, but it has to overcome a lot of things before we get there. Anything greater than 2 signals per mile and less, you know, anything we've looked at, we would not recommend moving forward. And when I say the signal density, think of it over a corridor of 10 to 15 miles, not picking one segment that's a mile long and counting the signals. These correlations tend to go to an entire corridor, not a specific segment. Okay, with that, you got the Reader's Digest condensed version. I'm going to go next into a little bit of how we evaluated these signalized corridors, how you can read the report and get some value out of it, and then go into some samples of the main points we want to leave you with. First, the case studies and methodology. Over the course of 2013 and 2014, we visited 9 states, and in those, well, I should say, some states more than once, we put out data collection equipment 9 times. Sometimes we got a single corridor, other times we got 2 or 3 corridors. We went everywhere from New Jersey down to North Carolina. We had a span of volume between 15,000 on the low end and 100,000 on the high end. Typically, though, most of the stuff we looked at, the majority was in the 20,000 to 50,000 AADT range. The number of lanes ranged between 2 and 12, but again, the majority of the facilities were 2 or 3 lane facilities in one direction. The 12 is in bi-direction. So you think of it as 2-lane and 3-lane arterials for the most part. And the signal density was anywhere from 0.5 to over 10 per mile. Again, the majority of the data is from about 0.5 up to about 3 or 4 signals per mile. And definitely that 10-plus did not perform well, I can guarantee it. And the objective is there's plenty of case studies here. Take a look at these case studies if you want to know how arterial in your jurisdiction will perform, find one that's equivalent to it, and then you can look up the case study and read how it operated. For each one of these corridors, we went through and did a detailed inventory, lanes, the AADT, the number of signals, the number of access points, the speed limits, median access, and major junctions. I'm not going to go through where all these are. If you want to read the details, it's all coded in there. Again, the whole idea going into it is we were going to find the key aspects of these arterials that correlated most to performance. And in the end, that key aspect ended up being the signal density. Secondly, the AADT. This is our traditional methodology. When you take a look, we carried over what we did on freeways, applied it to arterials with a couple adjustments. The speed ranges were adjusted based on the observed free flow. This is very typical of what we do, 0 to 15, 15 to 25, 25 to 35, and 35 and above. But short of that, everything was kept the same. Now, what the next bullet point says high variance masks of performance. What we found out is that if we looked at these numbers here, which was the spec for freeways, they didn't really change much, even though we had, you know, visually we could see difference in performance. What was happening is, as the flow became more complex on these arterials, the variance increased. And when the invariance increased, the SEM band increased. And so it kind of masked everything that we're trying to show. So in the end, we said when you look at arterials, it's best to go back to the mean with the help of Mike Fontaine from Virginia. It helped me realize that. I thank you, Mike. Keep that in mind. There are another couple insights. I'm going to proceed to the next slide. When looking at one of these, if you take a look at the difference between the SEM band column and the comparison with the mean column, We've gotten accustomed over 4 years of working with freeway data that that difference is typically 2 miles an hour. So when you take a look at this and take a look at the difference between these two columns, it's almost a measure of the complexity of the data. In this case, it's up to around 4 miles per hour, so you get an idea of the variance in the base reference data. The other insight you can gain from looking at this is the difference in these two columns. The first column is this average absolute speed error, you know, how much it is above or below in an absolute value sense from the ground truth. And this column over here is how much it's consistently high or consistently low. And when these numbers typically become equal, you know that when you have error, you're always overestimating that error. And that's one of the other main themes. When traffic slows down on arterials, probe data consistently, even if it can detect the slowdown, will still overestimate the speed during that delay. We also introduced a slowdown analysis. Slowdowns are defined typically a major slowdown, a reduction in speed of at least 15 miles per hour and over a duration of at least an hour. On some of them, we also did a minor slowdown analysis when the data allowed. And then for each one of these slowdowns, we visually inspected it, you know, call it engineering judgment, I'd call it what you want, and say, was the slowdown fully captured? You know, it's accurate. You could use it for traveler information or for performance measures. Was it partially captured? Partially captured, we came to the definition of the vehicle probe data indicated a major disruption to traffic, but was inaccurate in either capturing the extent of delay or the time period. That's that middle layer. And then failed to capture was anything from being completely blind to it to it may show something was going on the roadway, but it would have been interpreted as something minor as opposed to revealing that, hey, there's something significant going on. And then we tally these up. This ended up being a powerful tool to show as the signal density increases, the performance in capturing slowdown definitely degrades. And the last thing is the sample distribution method. Each one of these methods is performed on each arterial, and if you dig into all the archives and appendices in the final report, you can find all the data. In the summary report, we just bring forward a few examples. Now, the sample distribution method, it's based on overlaying data from multiple weekdays. So we take data from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 2 weeks. We do it both with the reference data as well as with the vehicle probe data. If there is recurring congestion, this method really amplifies it. If there's non-recurring congestion, it's not so great. But a certain portion of our case studies had significant recurring congestion, and you could really see in the contrast between how the two perform. If you're interested in performance measures on arterials and how well this data can be used for performance measures, the sample distribution method is the tool to use to understand its fidelity. From this data, we produced histograms, and from the histograms, we produced these cumulative frequency diagrams. I'm not going to go into great length about what these are. They're statistical plots that display the distribution of speed and travel time quite concisely. Another nice thing about this is from these diagrams, you can calculate many standard performance measures. Again, the strength of this method, it can capture repeatable complex flow dynamics and characterize the nature of the variation when it is recurring congestion. Here's a couple of examples. This example comes from a near freeway-like arterial up on New Jersey route. Up in New Jersey, this is actually, I believe it's US-1, but I'm going from memory here. If you take a look, this is the overlay plot. The top and the bottom are both 2 weeks of weekday data plotted on top of each other, and you can see that the pattern above, which is the Bluetooth reference data, closely matches the pattern below, which is the vehicle probe data. This would be typical of any freeway that you would look at, as well as these super high-end arterials. If you take a look and convert it to the CDF statistical plots, which are here to the right, these are ensembles of curves. Each line represents a different hour, and in this bold black line is the peak hour. It's furthest to the right here on this CFD curve, meaning it has the greatest delay. If you take a look at the pattern of curves in the Bluetooth and the pattern of curves in the probe data, very similar, very well performing. The next slide shows where probe data becomes challenged. The top is a overlay plot of the reference data. You can see starting in the morning, the majority of the traffic gets through at about 3 minutes, having to stop and wait for a cycle. A few gets through faster, but the majority is up here. At 3 p.m. in the afternoon, there's some type of signal timing change, probably to accommodate peak rush hour traffic in the evening, and they get the majority of the vehicles through at about 2 miles per hour. This is where this tool shines, is showing these repeatable patterns. And then in contrast to what's going on with the probe data, another general conclusion here is the complex patterns that are induced just by signal timing, from anything we saw from the probe data, it cannot capture it from our 2013 to 2014 data sets. You're also to take a look and create these statistical plots. You see the richness of the different time periods throughout the day here in the reference data, not similar at all in the patterns that you see in the probe data. Those are our three main tools, the traditional analysis, the slowdown analysis, and the distribution analysis. When we get to a case study, typically one works better than the other. All are available for all case studies as reference material. I want to pause slightly, look to Ruben. Is there any clarifications or questions? No. Anyone feel free to break in? The next part, I call it a tale of three arterioles. There's actually more than three, but the three are the well-performing, the middle layer between 1 and 2 signals per mile, and then an example of the latter, saying once you get over that, you get some unacceptable results. The first one I'm going to show you comes from New Jersey. This is U.S. Route 1, portion in Trenton and above. The key here is to notice its geometric attributes, a 2-to-4-lane facility, very high volume, 33,000 up to 90,000, and the signal density, which I said was key, is 0.7, or less than a signal per mile, and it's signed at 55 miles an hour. So this is right in the heart of what we said the data is usable. In fact, this is the best example of arterial freeway data that we had in our whole collection. And if you're familiar with the traditional report, this chart tells you about everything because the numbers on here look very familiar and consistent with our freeway results. These speed air numbers and stuff like this would even pass the freeway specifications quite easily. No one really likes to look at number tables, so we put in one example of if you were to leaf through this data and what we say is well-performing. Here's one of these 24-hour speed plots. On the speed plots, a very distinct AM rush hour and PM rush hour. And if you can distinguish the red in this, I know it's not the best graph for presentation. The probe data does follow the Bluetooth reference data quite well. I'm going to blow this up a little bit, and particularly the AM rush hour. Still, the color contrast is not the greatest, but you can see the probe data following through the Bluetooth reference data there. Another way to look at this is if you take a look at the slowdown analysis, remember the fully, partially, and failed to capture. For this, there were no failures. The fully captured and partially captured were split 2/3, 1/3. If this were to be performed on an actual freeway, we would expect the results to be more like 90-10, fully and partially. So we do see some degradation in performance, but still very good showing. The next one, arterial I'd like to show you as far as in the well-performing category comes from Pennsylvania. It's US 322 to the south and west of Philadelphia. It connects I-95 up to US 1. It's a little unusual because there's sections of this that are only one lane in each direction. The volume is between 21,000 and 33,000 AADT, but the signal density is really low, less than maybe 1 every 2 miles is the way we look at it. But still, the signals do govern the flow on this, and if you were to take a look at a representative 24-hour plot of the speed, this is typically what you would see. We have a very strong AM peak and a very strong PM peak. The probe data here in red definitely indicates a slowdown. In the morning, it gets within 10 miles an hour. I think we call this a partially captured slowdown. And in the evening, it's able to get down, and it averages about a little over 5 miles per hour air. And I think we classified that as fully captured slowdown. But this is consistent if you were to look through all of this data. Rarely did it miss a slowdown, but typically when it captured the slowdown, it failed to get the magnitude of it correct. If you were to take a look at the distribution analysis, much of this was recurring congestion, you'd see very similar results as related to this getting the full extent of the slowdown. If you take a look at the 24-hour plots, and if somehow you were able to take a magnifier to the probe data and you were able to get it to equal the vehicle probe data, the extent of delay is what's off here. These are travel time charts as opposed to speed charts, so as the numbers get high, the slower you get. Similarly, in the CDF charts, showing the ensemble of curves for the hours throughout the day, if you were somehow to stretch your probe data to make everything proportionally longer, you'd get a much better fit to what's going on actually on the roadway. Here to take a look at the slowdown analysis, the numbers look similar to US-1, not quite as good, even on US-322 with this low signal density. You miss 10% approximately, and everything else is fully and partially captured. Those are our two top performing arterials I wanted to show samples of. I got another two that are like mid performing. The next one comes from New Jersey, Route 22. If you're familiar with it, you can locate it here on the map to your left. It is typically two lanes in each direction, an AADT range in the 25,000 to 54,000. And the signal density falls in this 1 to 2 signals per mile range, 1.8 to be precise. This particular, corridor was unique in that it did not have it had very little non-recurring congestion. There were hardly any events in it. And our slowdown analysis could only find 4 slowdowns for the entire 2 weeks. What was unique about this is very repeatable traffic patterns. I won't call them congestion events, but patterns induced by signals so that we could see the contrast of how probe data performs under signal control versus what the reference data is. And here's one example. It shows here on the left the travel time throughout the day, 24 hours, and somewhere here in the evening the travel time, the signal timing changes to favor some movement, and you can see a shift in the mean travel time from about 2 to 3 up until maybe 3 to 4. You don't see any of that reflected, at least I don't see any of that reflected in the probe data. And again, if you take a look at the CFD charts, you see equal differences here. The next chart shows something similar. I wish these were a little bit larger because I don't think they're coming through across the webinar as well. But this one shows that sometime around in the evening peak hour, they changed signal timing again. It went through the majority getting through in 1.5 minutes to being split, being this bimodal distribution. And you can see all this reflected in the statistical charts to the right, where all this level of detail in the probe data is, for the most part, lost, reporting just a constant travel time through here of 1 mile per hour throughout the day, regardless of the changes in signal timing. Again, an example of this optimistic bias. The next one I'm going to show you in this mid-tier is coming from Virginia Route 7. You may be familiar with it. This is also known as Leesburg's Pike. It is a higher-end arterial. There are some businesses and development around it. For the most part, it's a heavy commute route. 2 to 4 lanes in each direction. Here's a sample view of what the arterial looks like through much of this corridor. It's signed anywhere between 35 to 55. And the signal density is up in this danger zone of 1.9, which means, you know, we're not in anticipating great results. And here's some examples of what's going on. The traditional reason, let's see, I'm going to go down here a minute. This is what I was expecting to see. When we first looked at the results for VA7, we were kind of, something was going on here that we didn't quite understand. When we sorted through it all, we found out two of the segments in this corridor were considerably different in performance than the rest. The top-level traditional results are contrasted with these other two segments down below. And we looked into our notes, we found out, hey, there's construction activity. The guys who deployed the sensors confirmed it, then we checked with VDOT's records and confirmed it as well. So we split it up. What I'm going to show you is a sample from both, this VA7 that's in this middle tier with no construction, as well as the tier with construction. And what we found out is during these major disruptions that are not, you know, that impact the normal flow of the roadway, probe data is significantly challenged. If you're to take a look at a VA7 in the non-construction zone, here's one sample plot. The results weren't all that great, but I wanted to show you this because the bimodal distribution in the afternoon when the signal timing changed and a few people were able to get through in 45 to 50 versus the normal 20 miles an hour, you could see the probe data reacting. This is the benefit you get from increased volume. Most of the time, probe data will snap to the faster of the two modes, but as the volume increases, it gains the ability to split the difference appropriately. This is rare to see this in this data set, but it is one instance where volume does help. And then contrast this in the construction zone. You had major delays throughout the entire day, this one being almost 8 hours in length, and the probe data swapping below, free flow speed of 45 miles an hour up here, and you see a few data points down here, 10 to 15, really not capturing at all what's truly going on this roadway. If you're to take a look at the slowdown analysis without the construction zone, these are numbers that I would say would be typical for the type of roadway we're looking at, capturing about two-thirds, either fully or partially, and failing to capture or not being aware of about one-third. Once you're in the construction zone, the character totally changes, missing almost 75% of all slowdowns. And the last one that falls into this poor performance area comes from Virginia as well, is US 29, and is our last case study. As we're wrapping this up, I see I'm somewhat on time. This is a major thoroughfare. It has much more commercial activity on it than Route 7 that we just showed you. If you take a look at the volumes, 15 to 45,000. If you take a look at the signal density, it's well over this 2 signals per mile threshold. It's up in the 3.6 range, and it's signed anywhere from 35 to 50 miles an hour. This can pretty much be summed up with the major slowdown analysis. Cutting right to the chase, once you get to this signal complexity, probe data is challenged to accurately reflect significant congestion events, missing almost 50% of them consistently throughout this corridor. Here's an example from US 29 about how it's challenged. There's a lot in here. I could probably speak 15 minutes, but I'll try to summarize it in 15 seconds. You take a look at this Bluetooth data throughout the day. There's this bimodal pattern, a lot of variance, but when you look closely, a portion gets through in about 20 and a portion gets through in about 40. The probe data tends towards the faster speed, and then in the evening, something happened, most likely an incident, where all the traffic is forced down to this lower regime and the probe data is challenged to reflect it accurately. This is an example of the failed to capture a significant slowdown in the previous statistics. Thankfully, we're near the end and bringing it all together. I'm going to pause here both to get a drink as well as to entertain any questions.
Hey, Stan, this is Mike Fontaine. I just had a quick question about the Route 7 data during construction. I'm wondering if the flipping back and forth between the free flow and the very congested travel times is a result of going back and forth between real-time and historic data at the site, as opposed to something that the vendor's doing to process their data. So in other words, the real-time data flow is showing the construction impacts, but when there's no real-time data, it's defaulting back to the typical, you know, historic free flow at the site.
I think that very well could be the answer. We did not run that analysis. That's worth going back and checking, Mike. So that would be a good chance to get a little more insight to see if this real-time attribute that comes with the probe data would help sort out this. Tell you what, I'll get Masood to ship you the data set, and we can take a look at that. That's an excellent comment.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting because when we looked at Route 17 recently, it was the real-time data generally matched what we were seeing with the construction zone when it was reduced speed. So I think that's a possible explanation.
Okay. I know we saw that on freeways when probe data gets lost. It, you know, goes back to mama, so to speak, so it goes back to an historical average. So that could be an explanation of what's going on there. Okay, well, let's close this out now. I went through those examples of arterials, hopefully to put some images in there of what the issues are. So we'll recap these issues. This is a replay of that first slide. Probe data quality most correlates to signal density in our findings. Volume definitely helps, but it doesn't help overcome the issues associated with high signal density. And accuracy is anticipated to improve, and I think from Mike's comments as well as from Masood's comments, they've taken a look at data from 2015 already, and they're seeing the needle move. They're seeing the improvement. The pace of improvement is what we hope to monitor here. Top-level takeaways. I wrote this about a month or two ago when I heard people saying, you know, let's charge forward and use probe data for performance measures and signs. And I said, I think expectations are running a bit ahead of reality. We saw large gains in data quality on freeways from 2008 to 2013, and I think we were anticipating similar gains on arterials. I don't think they're coming as fast as we anticipated. So I just wanted to put that in bold, saying it's moving forward, but not at the pace we anticipated. Probe data is usable on the highest class arterials, as we said, with a signal density less than 1 per mile. It's still not at freeway data quality. The travel times are proportional to ground truth, so even though they're capturing the slowdowns, you may see errors in the extent of the slowdown anywhere from 10 to 30%. Occasionally, it will miss one of these slowdowns, but in all the data, that's well below 25%, and on US 322, it was no more than 10. Anything else, use with caution. You may see erratic performance. You may find portions where it performs well, but it will also surprise you where it performs poorly. And across the only exception to this last bullet, I think, was US 1 in New Jersey, that very high-end arterial. Everywhere else, there's a consistent positive bias at low speeds. There's a consequence of that. This is the other wrap-up slide. If you're using probe data on arterials now to do performance measures, as the probe data improves, your performance measures will show more and more delay on that facility. What's happening as the probe data improves, it'll get more accurate to the extent of delay, and it may fool you into think those facilities are performing worse, when the reality is we're just reflecting them better. Probe data continues to be challenged anywhere where there's severe queuing, such as multi-cycle delays on signals, and the vendors I know are working to try to find ways to overcome that. Probe data in general is not sensitive to these bimodal traffic patterns when a portion gets through at two different speeds or two different travel times. When that occurs, more often than not, it chooses the faster of the two speeds. Increased volume does help to split the difference accurately. But in all of this, the way we're currently reporting data, it won't show you those those bimodal things. It'll just simply try to split the difference. We're working with the vendors now to see if there's an appropriate way to show the true nature of it. And in general, it will not reflect the impact of signal timing changes or the complexity of the signals, but it it's challenged in those regards. Major disruptions like what we saw with the construction appear problematic, something that totally changes the historic nature, the expectation, the control of traffic of, you know, Route 7. That's only a single data point, so I don't want to state it too strongly, but it was the observation. That wraps up the overall summation of what the takeaways are, the high-level thoughts to keep in mind if you're considering moving forward with probe data. The next set of slides is kind of where we're going from here. The validation program is continuing. Masood gave an excellent summary of where we're at as far as from the Vehicle Probe 2 project moving forward. We're currently in the midst of processing validation data on U.S. Route 1 in Virginia from the D.C. Beltway all the way down to Fredericksburg. I quickly looked at the geometric analysis on this, and this is definitely above 2 signals per mile. So this would have been one of these arterial corridors, and I'm specifically talking about the northern half. We broke it into 2 chunks. It would be one of these corridors that we wouldn't recommend to use vehicle probe data simply because we didn't think any acceptable results would come. What we're seeing is what we call encouraging early results. Masood described it as the probe data from all vendors, what we're saying from the industry, appears to be consistently capturing the slowdowns in this corridor. They do miss a few on occasion, but they are much better at capturing it. But we still see the same issues that even though they capture the slowdown, they're not getting the full extent of the slowdown accurately. I also want to mention moving into 2015, Maryland has created a test bed. We call it the Maryland Supplemental Coverage. It covers about 120 miles. This 120 miles covers many critical arterial corridors that we want to monitor probe data for accuracy. The next couple of validation exercises from the Corridor Coalition will be performed on this Maryland Supplemental Coverage. So we hope to provide continuous feedback, first with the Maryland Route 1 results and then followed on by some of the critical arterial corridors from this network. If you're interested in reading the full report, draft copies, we share draft copies once we're confident to share them. There still may be typos in them and a few minor problems, but they're shared at that website. And if you can't write that down fast enough, just drop me a note and I'll get that to you. Once everything is polished, it will be available on the Coalition website. We're anticipating in May. We really want to tie this up and start moving forward with the new data. Any questions?
Ruben, would you like to ask the one question that was in the chat box?
Sure. Keith asked if you could talk a little bit more about improvements in probe data quality over time.
Okay. We hope it'll occur. I'll repeat the question. Can we talk about a bit more about improvements in probe data over time? I'll interpret that as what do we expect. From the little that we've looked at in 2015, it is improving. I think what we learned in 2013 and 2014, let's not anticipate that it's going to become ready for prime time overnight or within a year. That the challenges of queuing on a roadway and the complexities of traffic flow that signals induced are not minor challenges for any type of probe data. Readjust our scale of when it's ready for prime time. Based on what we're seeing in 2015, I think we're going to be able to show you in measurable results, here's how the needle has moved. So I don't know, anything else I say beyond that would be speculative at this point.
Thanks. But can you, are there specific things that the vendors are doing to improve the quality, or is it just more probes, or?
Two things I'll speak towards. One is definitely more probes, not only more probes, but higher reporting probes. Probably even in the 2013-2014 timeframe, even though the number of probes were increasing, these probes typically reported once a minute at the highest rate. In discussion with the probe vendors, not only is their source of probes increasing, but the time update of these probes are getting down into, you know, the seconds range, maybe 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, something like that. And that's critical. Not only do they have more data to work from, and this is the second point, probably up until last year, the majority of these probe services worked more like random speed detections. They would get their GPS probe solution and say, I'm at this location, I'm traveling at this speed. And that is that was the primary constraint that didn't allow them to appropriately deal with queues. Now that they have the probe density, not only in numbers but also density in time, they can do what some of it call it point pairing, some call it matching. Instead of taking an instantaneous speed and trying to use it, they can take that probe that reports once every 15 seconds, for instance, and say, okay, what is the actual travel time that this probe experienced over the last minute, and then map it to the appropriate segment and do a better job estimating total delay. We hope to see that ability kick in the next 12 months to resolve some of these issues of, you know, missing complex queuing, as well as trying to get it more accurate when things do slow down at traffic lights. Okay, now we have the test. Well, I'll turn around, and I like the questions. You know, we're trying to fashion a validation program moving forward. We've evolved over time, and many times we ended up repeating what we did last year simply because that's what's in front of us. And we're realizing now that we've pretty much mastered freeways. We're going to continue to do that at a less frequent pace, and we're getting better tools for arterials. With the few minutes we have left, are there any comments about, you know, as the coalition moves forward, what type of feedback they would appreciate or needed in the probe data arena that we can, you know, steer that program to answer?
I have a question. It's Zoe from DBRPC. If a DOT has a good traffic signal data layer, would it become possible to feed that in so that one could select for arterials by different densities of signals? Otherwise, we could do that in GIS.
I would suggest that you'd have to get your traffic engineering division in the room. Those charts that I showed you that were, you know, here's the signal density, here's the curb cuts, the grad students hate them. They had to do it by hand. We got on, our GIS was Google Earth or Google Maps. I am not aware, I don't work that closely with the municipal traffic engineering outfits, but I have some experience working at the state level when they're in charge. You know, those data sets that port well, you know, from the traffic engineering division over into a planning, I have not seen. You'd have to talk with them to see if it's available at that for those purposes.
Yeah, we've done that before. We can pull the signals at the quality that it is, the signal layer into GIS. So we could generate signals per mile and give this a try.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you're able to do that, you know, and use those thresholds, I think as probe data improves, it will follow, you know, the signal per mile complexity will continue to hold. As it gets more capable, it'll continue to push that until it can resolve, you know, any signal density.
Hey, Stan, this is Kelly Wells.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to communicate this to the people in my DOT and in the MPOs that use this data? And I'm wondering if there's any thought to putting some kind of almost like a disclaimer. I know in the user delay cost calculations, like they keep popping up this box that says, beware, these are based on, you know, really general volume. Should we be doing the same thing with arterial? So we're telling people, hey, be careful when you use this arterial data. And maybe something as simple as what you said, you know, be careful of the signal density, be careful of the AADT. Have you thought about that at all?
Yes. In fact, that's I think that's kind of the whole purpose of this presentation when I put it together. I know in my own mind I was anticipating the results to be better than they were, and I wanted to put a, you know, caution signs up, you know, beyond this signal density, beware, as well as the other one saying if you're using this for performance measures, realize these, you know, the same arterial, if it performs the same this year as next year, most likely next year your data will show it performing worse, and it's a result of the probe data improving, not as a result of the actual facility worsening. So,
right.
Yes, ways to get that message out of caution as this data stream matures, there'll be some bumps along the road.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you didn't hear this presentation and you just go into VTP tomorrow and run all this analysis and run it again in a year, you're going to draw potentially bad conclusions.
Yes, I agree with that very much.
Okay.
Maybe we need to reduce this thing, you know, 5 takeaway points or 3 takeaway points of applying probe data on arterials that can be shared broadly.
Okay, I think within the tool, though, is the key because, you know, if you just, I've been giving so many people access saying, use this, get in there, play with it, use it, use it, and then they're going to start using it, and they don't know this. Like, how can I touch everyone that I've led to this tool unless it says it somewhere? At least I know there's just the pure data, but then there's VPP. So at least the people who are using VPP would have this pop up, much like Michael does with the user delay cost stuff.
Okay. I'll talk with Michael and see if we can get a concept moving.
Okay. Thanks.
Dan, this is Ben.
Hello? Yeah, this is Wen Jin from FW Cog. Here I just want to add an observation from us, and I do observe those phenomena you just described, because in our region we report the performance of those kind of long NHS, usually small arterials, and we have about 2,800 directional miles and in our region, in our planning area, and we observe that kind of the congestion has been increasing in the past several years, and that might be a result of the probe data improvements.
I think that would have, you know.
Yeah, one of the factors.
That very well contributed to that, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Stan.
I don't know. The optimist in me says, you know, I want that to be due to economic activity increasing.
No, because on the freeway side, we didn't observe so much kind of increase. It's kind of the freeway interstates and those kind of smaller arterials, kind of there have different kind of paths or trends. So,
hey, Stan, it's Mike Fontaine. I guess I just sort of echo what Wen Jing's saying. We're sort of seeing that on the Virginia roads, and I know that talking to the folks at TTI, they've even seen those numbers sort of manifested in the urban mobility report numbers they're pushing out, where the arterial delays are generally, you know, increasing sometimes pretty dramatically from year to year.
Yes.
So it's definitely got some sort of performance measure implications depending on how far off the freeway system you're going. In terms of sort of validation items going forward and possible modifications to VPP suite, I know that there's been movement on trying to include ability to filter by the data quality codes for the vendors to distinguish between the real-time versus non-real-time data.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the work we've done in Virginia, we definitely see differences in performance between whether or not it's real-time coded by the vendor or not. And so I guess I would say, you know, sort of building off what Kelly had, I almost wonder if there needs to be a caveat to the user about, okay, if you're electing not to use purely real-time data, you know, recognize that this is what the vendor is doing to sort of fill in the data gaps, and, you know, that has implications on what, how you can use this data in the future. So sometimes I guess I find that the data quality codes that the vendors provide are very poorly understood by the user base. Particularly with INRIX, I know we had the 10s, 20s, and 30s, and for the longest time, I think people thought here in the state that the 20 codes were a blend of real-time and non-real-time data and not just the historic daytime data. So I think that's another thing that I guess maybe for the data quality comparisons in the future, it might be interesting to look at sort of the entire data set like you have been doing versus just the real-time coded data set and see what the performance differences are.
Noted. I agree with that, and I got two things to bring up to Michael. We need to do more to make the users of the VPP suite cognizant of this issue of real-time and non-real-time.
Stan, I remember you reported some of those analysis results a couple years ago, just looking at like score equals to 30 compare. I believe there's some like report or presentation.
Yes, I know we did that. We added it as extra on the traditional report.
Right. Right.
I mean, everything with specifications, you know, drives the validation on the freeway, but I know that became a curiosity. I honestly couldn't tell you if it still carried along or if we lost that in the process. Perhaps Masood could comment if he's on the line. I'm
on the line this time. What was the question?
Do we still carry along the real-time, non-real-time in the traditional analysis?
We used to do that for the freeways, and we haven't done freeway validation for a while. And the real-time, non-real-time was based on the INRIX scores. Now that we have three vendors, it's more difficult to do. We have to define the threshold for real-time, non-real-time. So for VPP2, we haven't done it, but I've been thinking about doing it in a consistent way, but we have to make sure that whatever measure we pick is consistent over the three vendors, which is difficult.
Okay.
Stan, this is Keith again. Just in terms of going forward with the validation, I would suggest that as the MAP21 performance measures become more solid, that you report on those measures and the impact of, you know, to compare them, calculating versus with Bluetooth versus the probe data. See what.
Yeah, actually, we have to. I've been thinking about starting a dialogue with the vendors, and now as the data users, we are in the position of deciding what is real-time and what's not real-time based on the scores that they report, and each vendor reports in a different fashion. I've been thinking about asking the vendors to decide which data is real-time and not, as simple as putting yes or no or one or zero next to each data record. So I'll start communicating with them, and as soon as we settle down on the measure for the real-timeness, we know whether INRIX is score 30, but with the other two, then we can, for the future validations, break down the report by the real-time, non-real-time, and all, like we used to do.
Yeah, and Keith, I also heard you with respect to MAP21, and you know what? If some of those measures give themselves well to the validation process, we should steer it that way as much as possible. Good point.
Another question I have for the validation team is that recently I heard like the Wi-Fi. In addition, I mean, a different, detectors, not detecting Bluetooth signals, but instead of Wi-Fi signals. And I heard that the Wi-Fi signals, the sampling rate is much higher. Is it about like 35% of the total vehicle volume? The Bluetooth is about 5 to 10. I wonder, the validation team has any plan in the future to switch to the Wi-Fi based validation?
Yes, on that. Unfortunately, I'm not sure if we have the funding. The coalition has their own set of Bluetooth equipment. I think it's been in service for going on 7-8 years. I know internally to the University of Maryland, some of the first Wi-Fi detectors are currently being put on the road for continuous monitoring, and we're working with our deployment support to see, you know, how do we work that into the system, because the Wi-Fi primarily brings benefit at slow speed. I don't think the sampling numbers are as stark as what some of the vendors claim, but definitely they do provide benefit, particularly to increase sample size over long corridors where cars turn off. So we're going to bring that up in discussion to see if somehow we can move that forward with the coalition. But it's definitely our desire to move that way.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, Stan, it's Mike. I mean, we did some Wi-Fi testing up in Northern Virginia, and we saw generally about 2 to 4 times the re-identifications on a congested arterial than we had with Bluetooth. But we definitely saw the issues with the problems at higher speeds due to the way that Wi-Fi is scanning. So I think it'd be a good tool for your arterial analysis, but maybe less so for the freeways.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. That was my understanding as well. I'm kind of anxious to get some data in to, you know, firm up those reports with some actual examples. But that's what I've heard, that the slow speed is where the Wi-Fi brings benefit.
Yeah, if you're interested, I can send you some of the testing we did if you're interested in looking at data.
That'd be great. I appreciate it.
I want to have that as well. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, I'll send it to both of you.
Okay, we've hit the, we're a little bit past 12. We'll open it for any more comments or questions, and if we don't hear any in 5 seconds, let's bring it to a close. Thanks you very much for joining us. Awesome comments. We knew we were going to have to restructure validation with all the new concerns and the changes in the industry, and these are great ideas to move forward. No, hearing none. Thanks very much. Karen, thanks for hosting KMJ, and we'll sign off for now.
You're welcome. Thank you, Stan, for a great presentation. Thanks, everyone, for joining.